I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to talk about happiness, the pursuit of happiness. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. One of the best things to have living in this unpredictable world is resilience. That resilient living is at the heart of this new book, The Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness by Dr. Amit Sood. Dr. Sood has guided more than 50,000 people through his program, and he's our guest in this hour. During the show, we'll tell you how to have Dr. Sood's book sent to your door with our thanks for supporting this show and WNPR's many offerings. I have really loved reading this book and did many of the exercises in it. This is a keeper for me. We will discuss in this hour Dr. Sood's four-step 10-week program as he explains it in the book, how to train attention, cultivate the emotional resilience we've been mentioning, starting a simple mind-body practice, and picking healthy habits. The payoff is enormous no matter where you stand in life. Dr. Sood is professor of medicine and chair of the Mind-Body Medicine Initiative at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. He's on the phone. Welcome to the show, Dr. Sood.
Thank you so much. It's truly a privilege to be here and to talk to you and to your listeners. Working here at Mayo Clinic, seeing patients and seeing so much suffering, I'm always impressed, actually amazed by the spirit of human resilience. And the goal is for us to not let adversity push us into that direction, but to preemptively become more resilient, and through that resilience find greater happiness.
I loved it that you said at the beginning of the book how surprised you were when you came to the United States to find so much suffering when you had come from places and seen very tough things going on, but that there's a lot of suffering here.
Oh, there is so much optional suffering in the world. I have personally struggled with being happy all my life. I'm doing a better job now. When I was, say, 7 or 8 years old, a bully told me that I was picked up from a heap of garbage and I'll be sent back there if I don't really conform to the norms that he was placing on me. And I believed his every single word and lived the next 8 or 10 years worried that I'll be transplanted back. And when I was 17, I was in my hometown. We had the worst chemical spill the world had ever seen that killed over 10,000 people just a few miles away from our home. So I don't want to share, you know, going to my own sort of saga, but, you know, having lived the first 27 years of my life overseas and seeing a lot of poverty and malnutrition and infections and so on, I thought I was coming, when I came to the U.S., that I was going to come to Disneyland of the world where everybody's going to be very happy. And I thought people here grow up as a child in Disneyland, and when you are an adult, you play slots in Las Vegas, and we retire in Florida playing bingo. I thought life was all going to be hunky-dory here. So seeing the amount of stress surprised and shocked me, which spurred my journey into understanding human resilience and suffering and happiness. And what I realized was a lot of suffering is happening because of nobody's fault. It is because of fault in the design of human brain.
Ah, yes. What do you mean by that? What do you think the brain does that causes more suffering and gets in the way of happiness?
Oh, well, let me ask you one question. You know, think about your last promotion. How long did you enjoy your last promotion?
About a day.
And say you were passed over for promotion, how long will you be upset about it?
About a year.
A year is very good. Some people may remember it for their entire lifetime. So we have this thing, this instinct within us where we deflate the good and we inflate the bad. So we have this design, this is a design problem, which is called negativity bias combined with hedonic adaptation. So we adapt to the good very quickly. Good that is not new is no longer good enough. Honey, I love you, but now please change. That's what we start thinking about our partners after a few years of marriage. So when you have this software that is designed to focus on what is not right, and there's always going to be something not right in our life, given how complex our life is. An average person these days has more than 50 user IDs. So obviously that will invite a lot of optional suffering. And this happens because of nobody's mistake. See, our brain was designed for survival and safety, like most animal brains. But what we are seeking is peace and happiness. For that, we need intentionality. We need to change the way our brain instinctively operates.
Mm. So here is, right at the start of the book, you give us a little task. There's a little box that any of us can write in. It's blank. And you ask this question. Based on your life's circumstances, think about what can go wrong in your life in the next hour. What can go wrong? Write your thoughts in this box. Write down only those things that have a good chance of happening. So I listen to that, and I think, well, a lot of things could go wrong in this next hour. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. Only write the things that have a good chance of happening to me. And all of a sudden, my pen is motionless. And I get to the end, and I thought, I can't write a thing that I'm worried about really has a good chance of happening. So that was so instructive to me. So tell me about this exercise.
Yes, thank you. So, you know, I promise you most of your next 1 hour will be okay. Most of our next 1 hour will be okay. Adversities are sprinkled here and there. They are not rare, but they are fairly uncommon. And what we struggle more with is the fear of adversity. Like Mark Twain said, which was very instructive, he said, I have suffered several terrible things in my life, some of which actually happened. So I've had three heart attacks and two strokes and three cancers, nearly died many times, all in my head. None of this has happened. But I have imagined myself into, when I had shoulder pain, I thought I had cancer at the apex of my lungs. And I wanted the MRI to make sure that is not the case. So we have this wonderful ability to imagine. And the interesting part of the brain is that what I imagine, I actually experience as reality. Imagination is real. If you imagine a spider crawling on your shin right now, the same area of the brain will activate as if the spider was actually crawling.
Well, anyone who reads a good novel understands what you're talking about because it is real to us.
Absolutely. So we have this wonderful ability to imagine. And now we have this wonderful ability to focus on the negative. You combine those two and this wonderful ability to spend most of the time mind wandering. Combine those three. And so most of us are spending a lot of time mind wandering, imagining negative things.
So
and
there,
this is happening subconsciously. Nobody's choosing to be this way. This is just the way the brain is designed.
Yes, and it's hard to appreciate the more positive things, the things that would make you happy when you're occupied that way. And a lot of this, we don't even understand that we're doing it, as you point out. So the next thing you talk about in your book, this is Dr. Amit Sood. He is author of The Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness, a four-step plan for resilient living, and it is terrific. So the first thing you talk about, the first step is to train our attention. You point out that attention is the gateway into our minds. And if you can train it, this empowers us to regulate what we think and perceive, not just these negative things that you've been talking about. So attention, for a lot of us, though, isn't just natural. We need to cultivate it, correct?
Absolutely. An average person these days has attention about a little weaker than that of goldfish. In one study, we are able to pay attention for about 8 seconds. Goldfish have a span of about 9 seconds. Our attention is doing a very good job of jumping from one point to the other rather than staying focused. This word I have not used in the book, but if I had to go back and edit something, I would say in one word, the whole idea is take charge. Nobody's going to do this for you. If you leave this to your innate brain, it'll continue with negativity bias. So if you take charge of how your brain is deploying attention, what it is focusing on, just as you take charge when you go to a restaurant and you pick what you eat, you don't tell the waiter, just get whatever for me, right? out of those 400 items. And you don't pick the items that you despise the most or the ones that you're allergic to. You pick the items that are the most delicious, that is good for your wallet and your tummy, right? So that is how you pick your attention. You choose where you deploy your attention. You choose to pay attention to the aspect of the experience that is most nurturing to you. This is not innate to us because of our negativity bias. An example is when you wake up in the morning. Most people, I mean, how long does it take for your mind to start wandering after you wake up?
Oh, about a second.
Yeah, or minus 5 seconds. Most people, we start mind wandering very quickly. What should I do? What should I dread? This is instinctive to all of us. You know, the moment we wake up, our adrenaline and steroid goes up. We have highest risk of heart attack first thing in the morning, highest risk of stroke, early death, sudden death early in the morning. Mm. So what we want to suggest is that our first exercise in attention is that before you step on the carpet, think about 3 or 5 people in your life who make you happy. And the whole exercise has a certain way of doing it where, for example, we invite you to remember the color of the eyes of your loved one. We invite you to visit the first time you saw this person. For example, you know, I've visited the OB room of our girls being born, you know, I don't know how many hundred times, and every time I enjoy it. And if the first thing I think about is my wife, and I think about how I am grateful to her, and she does the same thing to me, we meet each other with a much more positive energy, which goes to the kids.
Oh, stay right where you are, Dr. Sood. We're going to take a quick break here. I want to tell people how we can have this book, this plan, these steps. This is a project, actually, that I think would be great for an individual to read, to go through the steps in this, for a couple, if you're in a couple, for a family to do together. This is wonderful mind training. Talk about being able to coach yourself to see the best in life, to appreciate it when it goes by, not to be a kind of crazy airhead who's happy all the time, you know, because, and it's phony. I'm talking about understanding the great moments that are in our midst all the time, and then being resilient in the face of what's challenging. This is great. The Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness. If you would like us to send this to your door for a contribution of $6 a month, we are so delighted to do that. Here is the toll-free number, 1-800-584-2788, Lee Newton.
Yes, and what a fascinating discussion this is. And this book is very special indeed, because I think, you know, we've seen books out there about happiness, but nothing quite like this, because this is the Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness, and it truly is a handbook. It's a 10-week program that helps you get in the habit of staying positive, of letting stress go. And it doesn't matter whether this is something that you personally struggle with, or maybe you just feel like you can do a better job. You can just be happier, more grateful, that you can be in a better place, handle stress better. What a wonderful resource this book is. And you can get started today and support WMPR, the Faith Middleton Show here, by calling us at 1-800-584-2788. You can go to WMPR.org. You can join us there as well. $6 a month as an ongoing monthly donor, or a one-time gift of $72. We will send you this great book. So do it right now. Here's the number again, 1-800-584-2788.
As you can hear from Dr. Sood as he speaks, he's very encouraging and yet realistic. He has seen very hard things. He understands that all of us, every one of us, endures little nicks, bumps, some of them major, in the course of every single day. Also, great things are happening. Important moments are going on around us where we could connect with another. We kind of let the bumps and the bruises go without really saying, ouch, that hurt. And we also do the same with the goodness, with the joy around us, with what we can appreciate. We let that go flying by. This is a way of slowing us down to say, hey, I just want to feel alive. I want to feel the most alive I can feel. And he doesn't do this in this book in a finger-wagging way, you know, do this and you're going to be a better person because you need to be a better person. He says in here at one point, I see this as adding chocolate powder to your glass of milk. He said, I want this to be a good experience for you as we go through this. There's a kind of joy in his writing that is authentic. He's a very smart guy. We'd love to send it to you. I'm pretty pretty high on this book, as you can tell. I've really appreciated doing this. And I'm going to take some actions from this book. 1-800-584-2788. Bring your charge card to the phone. And for a pledge of, I forget now, what did I say?
$6 a month.
$6 a month. We will send it straight to your door and pass it on to someone you care about, too. 1-800-584-2788. We're going to go back to Dr. Sudden about a minute, Lee.
And one of the things I love about this book is that it's not our fault, that this is the way our brains are wired, and Dr. Sood is teaching us that. So if you feel like you can really be in a better place and that it's possible, this book can get you there. A 10-week program, wonderful exercises. This is a fantastic handbook for you, and I hope that you'll use it and support WNPR at the same time today. It's such a great thing to do. $6 a month as an ongoing monthly donor or a one-time gift of $72. So why not get started right now? 1-800-584-2788.
And I have to say, Lee, there are a lot of, this become a thing, you know, the happiness thing.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of books out there, and I, you know, pick them up. Who doesn't want more happiness? And I pick them up and I look, and, you know, many times I will say, And then every once in a while, a gem comes by. This is it. To be honest, I looked at the back cover first, and here was an endorsement from two people I respect, Dr. Andrew Weil and Dr. Daniel Goleman.
Right.
They are so great themselves, their writing and their work. And I thought, this is something for me to look at. And then when I did, very, very excited about this. Very useful in my life. Here's the number, 1-800-584-2788. And thank you. Dr. Amit Sood is my guest, professor of medicine at the Mayo Clinic and author of this book, The Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness. We will send this book, as you've just been hearing, to your door. Dr. Sood, you talk about, we did the first step, which is to, you know, how we can train our attention in a more useful way and a more, so that we can flourish more, I think. You know, as Lee said and as you said, this is not our fault. This is how our brains are wired. But we don't have to just settle for that default mode. We can actually work with that and have a feeling of greater happiness. And so you talk with us about how to do that. The next step would be to cultivate this emotional resilience. We see people in our lives, as you point out, who seem to have an ability, no matter what happens, it might be so staggering. We've all heard these stories, you know, are just horrible, horrible things, and they somehow keep putting one foot in front of the other. Sometimes even have the ability to grow from this terrible thing. For little things, they just have this resilience. Can you talk with us about what is emotional resilience to you?
I'll just say one thing prior to that. Thank you for all the kind words you are saying. My skin is a little brown, so I don't blush very well. So I have wondered about this all my life. I have seen tremendous models of resilience. I have seen, like, we recently lost a 35-year-old, and she recorded 1 minute, you know, thoughts on her, and all she talked about was love. She had a serious congenital heart malformation, and all she cared was about her mom and us and nurses, because she just didn't want to see anybody feel sorry for her or anyone to be upset or upset without in any way thinking about her own life. That is the age when people are outdating, they're raising babies, and here she was going from one ICU to the other. Where do these people come from? So I've been asking this question over the last several years of people. Think about somebody in your life, and think about someone who is truly resilient in your life, not a celebrity, someone who's unsung. And people talk about their mom and their dad and their grandfather, and then I ask them, what makes them that resilient? And here are the three, and again, I have not put this fully in the book, but, you know, a little bit more than what is in the book. So the three main themes that emerge. The first theme is all these people are other-centric. They don't think about themselves alone. They are busy with taking care of people around them, world around them. They have compassion. They have gratitude. They are instinctively kind. They are easily forgiving. So that is the first, other-centric. The second thing that came out was faith. a lot of these people have deep acceptance, which leads to surrender, and have a very strong anchor in faith. And third thing that has come out is most of these people have had wonderful role models. Now, so that is what makes, those are the three core aspects that make people resilient. What is emotional resilience? Emotional resilience is recovering quickly from adversity and not going to a deep, dark place from adversity. I'm sure if you close your eyes and think about one person in your life who you think is extraordinarily strong, who you would be like, want to be like, that person is resilient. Mother Teresa is a perfect model of resilience. 4 feet, 10 inches tall, you know, maybe 100 pounds, couldn't break a board in Taekwondo, but a spiritual black belt. So these are the people who are driven by meaning. They take their problems as challenges. They control what is controllable. The five core skills or virtues or values that make you emotionally resilient are gratitude for what is right in your life, compassion, acceptance, higher meaning, and forgiveness. And the way the program is structured, we have a theme for each day. Mondays are our days of gratitude, Tuesdays are days of compassion, Wednesday of acceptance, Thursday of higher meaning, Friday of forgiveness. What we have found is that just the first two steps, i.e. training attention and developing emotional resilience, are enough to decrease stress, increase happiness, enhance quality of life, decrease anxiety, even improve healthcare behaviors, improve relationship. We have done 17 clinical trials with this. And, of course, you know, Mayo Clinic is world known for high quality. I was very, very excited when my colleagues came and said that we feel like this is something we really feel passionate to share with the world. So a lot of research that has gone into it. What we have found is that the whole program is very, very scalable, very easy to learn, very easy to teach. And as you had earlier mentioned, Faith, the practices are, we don't add more milk to your glass of milk. We put chocolate powder in the milk. So most of these practices are sprinkled multiple times during the day, 30 seconds of gratitude here, 1 minute of compassion there. So total practice time may be 5 or 10 minutes, but they join together to lift your entire day.
So this... It seems to me that what you're saying is that resilience and training attention in a different way, these are like muscles that these can be trained in our minds, that we can learn these things. We can build that muscle and develop this capacity if you're not born with it, as some people appear to be. Maybe that's not quite the case, but that we can learn this.
Absolutely. So we have two daughters, two princesses, 11 and 4, and I had wrote a small blog maybe a year or two ago. So when our 11-year-old started learning playing piano at age 5 or 6, and she would want us to sit by her side and admire and clap at every time she did happy birthday, she did happy of happy birthday, and so we had to really cheer as if, you know, she's almost won a Nobel Prize or something. It was magical that in a year or so of her starting that, everything was flowing. Now she is playing she's competing, she's going to regional competitions, and I was like, what happened? And what's happening to her brain, do you think? It's learning a new skill. It is coordinating hand with music area, with creative area, and she is now wonderfully able to play piano. Why would that not be true for every other aspect of life? So the beauty of human brain is that it has almost infinite ability to learn and get better and get rewired, and even until very old age, 80s, 90s, their brain can still continue to rewire. If you can remember where, you know, your spouse hid your box of chocolate chip cookies, then your brain can learn new things. So we have this, scientists call this neuroplasticity. So resilience is very much like muscle that can be built. And what we have tried to do is, you know, if you were to consider resilience as soup, what are the ingredients that go into making this nurturing soup? And those ingredients, to my, what we have found are attention and emotional resiliency. And we talked a little bit about attention, and the five ingredients from gratitude to forgiveness are part of emotional resiliency.
So you talk about the way to, this would be an exercise, the way to heartfully meet loved ones and friends. What do you mean by that?
I'll tell you what happened to me a couple of weeks ago. I asked my wife, we've been married 22 years, and I asked my wife, what is the first thing you think about when you see me at the end of the day? And she looked at me. She was not sure why am I asking this question. She thought long and hard, and she said, chores. I think about what needs to be done. How can I get this guy to clean up the garage? And then I asked our four-year-old, what do you think about, you know, when you see daddy first at the end of the day? And she said, play. How can I play with you? So, mm-hmm. See, what happens is that over when we are with the same people, from play we get to chores. We lose novelty. If you were sitting with your high school buddy right now, the high school buddy will be much more interesting than your spouse. So what we need is a little bit of intentionality, where when you meet your family, you meet them as if you haven't seen them for a month. For the first 3 minutes when you go home, try not to find what is wrong about them. Sometimes I often say, tell people that for the first 3 seconds when you see your family, just notice the color of their eyes. And when you do that, you'll get the same joy you might get from watching sunrise in Hawaii, but for a much lesser cost.
So this is recovering what is lost as we grow older, that sense that children have, they are in this moment, new things are wondrous to them, they feel the joy of novelty, and as we get used to each other, that can disappear. And once again, this is a simple attitude adjustment, a practicing of a habit of restoring novelty to another person.
Absolutely. You spoke it so much more eloquently than I did, and
succinct
way. You're absolutely right. If I may share one perspective there, what we are trying to do is wake up the child within us, invite the child within us that we were when we were young, and that is the attention part. And the emotional resiliency part is invite the wisdom that we will have 10 or 20 or 30 years from now when mm-hmm. life teaches us. The problem with many times is that, you know, our child dies too soon and wisdom arrives too late. And we don't want that to happen. We want to be a child and a wise person both at the same time.
Oh.
That is where the greatest joy is.
Oh, you nailed it, Dr. Sood. Stay where you are, please, and we'll come back and continue our conversation. This is what is included in the Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness, a four-step plan for resilient living by Dr. Amit Sood, and he runs this department. 50,000 people have gone through this program, and it is the talk of so many in the profession. I'm talking about psychologists, neurobiologists. This is a very important thing that's going on. And he was asked to put all of this in this book. It is very smart and very easy reading at the same time. That combination that he's talking about, if you would like us to send this to your door for you, for your family, for someone you care about, we'd be delighted to do so for a contribution of $6 a month, meaning it's our thank you gift to you. And I am so proud to have this as a thank you gift for someone. This is going on my permanent bookshelf at home. 1-800-584, toll free, 1-800-584-2788.
And what a fascinating book this is, Faith. I've been looking at it all week, and I just feel like there's something for everyone here. There's something no matter where you are in your life. There's something you can benefit from in this book. And I know some people, you know, and there's friends of mine who say, you know what, I'm just a worrier by nature. I just don't handle stress well. Well, you know what, Dr. Sood is teaching us that that doesn't have to be the way, that we can train ourselves, that the brain is malleable, and that this book holds the answers to that, that there are certain exercises, things that you do, being more grateful, showing gratitude, and it will transform your life. And that is powerful stuff. I mean, Faith, you always talk about how your show is about the richness of life. There is nothing more rich than the happiness of, you know, ourselves and being able to give ourselves that gift.
Well, Lee, once again, this is what, you know, gives me a chance to say what a privilege it is to have conversation with someone like Dr. Sood, who has so much to share and does so freely and joyfully, wants to give the best of what he has. I feel like that's our job, is to find, to gather these, curate these people for you as you listen. And now we can also send you his guidance in this book, which is such enjoyable reading, The Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness. 1-800, it's toll free, 584-2788 for a pledge of $6 a month.
That's right. $6 a month as an ongoing monthly donor, or make a one-time gift of $72. This is a book that is going to free you from that negativity, that bias that you've been suffering from, perhaps, and or maybe you know someone who has a difficult time with it. This is such a great resource. We really would love to send it to you as our thank you to you. You know, we're talking about gratitude. We often feel like we can't show our gratitude enough to people just like you who come to the phone, who go online, who make a contribution and support everything that WMPR does. And we want to be able to thank you in the best way possible. Certainly, the Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness is something that has the power to transform your life. And we would love to thank you with sending you that book today. So please go to the phone right now. Here's the number to call, 1-800-584-2788, or you can go to WMPR.org and make your contribution there.
Yes. As Dr. Sood says, we all come into this world, this is the way brains are wired, with this very powerful fault-finding software installed in our brains. We all have it. So if you have a partner, you can kind of go to that default and forget this important piece of wisdom, as he points out in the book. You stop enjoying what you're trying to improve. So that is a formula for how to distance yourself from your loved ones, whether it's your child, a friend, your partner, or whoever it might be. So this is one of the lessons in this, I think, invaluable book. It is terrific. The Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness, very smart, a four-step plan for resilient living, done in the smartest way. 1-800, call now, or you can go online. Many people do that, WNPR.org, and they make a contribution there, and you can have this book sent to your door. Toll free if you want to do it right now, 1-800-584-2788. I like to say the online thing because if you're listening in the car right now, you want to be able to get home, get to your destination, and go online to take advantage of this. I hope you do. This is one of the best things. 1-800-584-2788, and thanks. We continue our conversation. I'm Faith Middleton. Thank you to our producers, Lori Mack, the senior producer, and Jonathan McNichol. Our guest is Dr. Amit Sood. He is the author of The Mayo Clinic's Handbook for Happiness, directs this big project at the Mayo Clinic. He's professor of medicine there at their College of Medicine. He's chair of the Mind-Body Medicine Initiative at the clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. And they've asked him to put, 50,000 people have gone through this program. It is endorsed, his program, by Dr. Daniel Goleman, Dr. Andrew Weil, respected by many, and also respected by us now. So, Dr. Sood, you know, here's the thing that I do. I like to plan, and I don't want to change that about myself because I find it very reassuring. So our psychologist, Dr. Nancy Horn, was once explaining how she plans how she's going to be in a nursing home if she should end up there. And in a very positive, resourceful way, she goes through the whole plan. And so if that should happen to her, she knows it's going to be okay. So I like planning. But one of the things I can do is, in planning for something, what if something horrible happens? You know, I go to a doctor and they say you have this terrible cancer and you don't have long to live. I get afraid in my planning that I'm going to get frozen in the state of shock. And I'm not going to be able to be that person that you describe who is so, you know, your patient there, who is so concerned about others and not wanting them to feel bad, you know, she's trying to take care of everybody up to the last minute. You said she just recently died. What an amazing person. What are we to do if we are stuck in our thinking, you know, and we're not that ideal person? We get afraid that we're not going to be able to be the noble one in the midst of something horrible.
And that is so, I'm glad you asked this way. That is so common, and I think that is true for all of us. I've been stuck like that many, many times. Mm-hmm. You know, anytime you have, you're of course stuck, you could be stuck about yourself, but anytime you have children or people who depend on you, it's even more difficult. I recently saw somebody whose son, grown-up son, has a severe GI illness, and this is a very successful executive, but his entire stress was about his son. Now, having seen, we see 50,000 people a year, so we've seen about 500,000 people so far with this program. So when I see people, I've seen a lot of people who've gone through unimaginable suffering. A very high proportion of them actually emotionally come out very, very well. They actually come out stronger than, you know, if they had lived a life without suffering. So this is a little bit comforting to us that when we imagine a struggle in life, we actually struggle more. If that particular event was ever to happen to us, we are likely to be much, much stronger in dealing with it.
Can I quote you? Because you said this just as you did right now. You write in your book, "Can I practice all of these principles I'm discussing perfectly? Certainly not." You're talking about yourself. "But do I think I'm better at it today than I was a decade ago? Absolutely. Progress is often slower than you wish, but it's progress nonetheless. And with this progress come the gifts of freedom, from hurtful negative emotions to greater happiness and better self-control. With practice, you have better influence over your mind and can choose your thoughts. Choose them. That's a critical step in progress. When you choose your thoughts, they are healthier. When thinking happens to you, you are more likely to wander into negativity." And this business about, you know, we hear a lot about character building, and I think it all sounds so great. What do we really mean by that, you know? And I was reading something the other day that we have so many opportunities in the course of a single day to choose a direction, and that is a step toward building character. So you write here, "Character is determined more by how you relate with the common and the mundane, and not particularly when the spotlight is on you."
Absolutely. So how I connect with my secretary, with a patient who depends on me, how am I when I know nobody's looking? How are my thoughts inside my head? Am I thinking kindly about somebody who potentially annoys me? Do I delay judgment? Am I spontaneously kind to people who depend on me? That is what is a reflection of true character. You know, I can always give a fantastic 30-minute speech that may be sounding inspiring and talk about all these values, but am I living it? And I think that is the key in character, and the best way to see that is not how I interact with those who are senior to me and can change my, you know, life's future in some way, but those who depend on me, those who I supervise. Am I kind to them? That is what is the mark of true character, and the key to character building, actually, the single most important word for character building, for leadership, for emotional intelligence, for professionalism, is compassion. Universal compassion, which comes from understanding the human condition. When I'm seeing a teller, I'm standing in this line, and this actually happened to me, and she's slow, and I have a deadline, and I have to go quickly, and I become judgmental, and so on, and then I look at her, and I say, okay, so she is perhaps 35, perhaps she didn't sleep well at night, perhaps she has a sick child, perhaps she had an argument, perhaps her mother is having memory issues. Mm-hmm. There's a million things that could be going wrong, and she has all the right to be slow. Who am I judging her? And in that that moment of reframing, I was much more patient, connected better with her, and I walked out happier despite being late. So the basic idea is, can you have this culture of compassion, this commitment to compassion all day long to everybody you see? That is character.
You describe also a scene with a boss where this worker is trying so hard, trying to meet a deadline, to do it well, works so hard through the weekend, misses family events, all of that. It gets done, and that boss calls, and the worker picks up the phone, and the boss says one thing: you did not number these pages. You know, there you would change that story slightly, and a million workers would understand what that moment is like. With this kind of compassion you're talking about, this worker begins to understand, wait a minute, you know, consider the possibilities here. I'm crushed by this. I'm disappointed. I'm hurt. But let me consider the possibilities. And the next thing you find out is that this boss, who might have handled this differently, has a kind of attention deficit and needs organization in his life, doesn't mean to crush the worker. This stuff, though, that you're talking about is hard to do.
Oh, yes. It needs a lot of intentionality. It needs you to have a very strong anchor in your self-worth. It needs for you to truly believe all the love that flows your way. And it needs for you to say, I'm not going to believe who don't believe in me. I have not met many people who struggle with being appreciated too much. Most of us struggle with not being appreciated too much. Or because of, as your colleague was saying, that our brain is designed as a fault-finding, fault-pointing machine. And some people, as you know, are very forthright with whatever is not right, because that's how they are designed. So you have to step back, take everything with a pinch of salt, and there's here is my belief. My belief is, and I'm totally anchored in that, I'm not going to believe in those who don't believe in me, period. I know my intentions are good. I know I try to work hard as best as I can, given my family commitments, my clinical commitments, my commitment to students, and so on. There are times I will forget replying to an email, and there are times I will not meet deadlines. And if people put me down because of that, I will not believe them, because I will go by my intentions and my effort, not the outcome of my actions. If you hold me to the outcome, I can never guarantee, because a million things may happen between what I do and what the outcome happens. So if every one of us said, I will keep my intentions clean, I will give the best effort, but beyond that, if things don't go the right way, I'm not going to believe those who don't believe in me. If everybody did that, we will lose the fear of committing mistakes. And I believe the best way to decrease mistakes is to lose the fear of committing mistakes.
Dr. Sood, would you say that the first task is to recognize a feeling and to not try to change it, but to say, this is the feeling I am having. Whatever it might be, I am hurt, I am depressed, I'm bored, whatever. To feel the feeling, to know you have it, and then begins the kinds of things that you're talking about. Some people might mistake this, all of this, for I have to change the feelings I had, or I had to push them away and pretend they're not there. And so we get people walking around like these kind of silly, happy robots, and none of it seems authentic. So you get what I'm pointing to here?
Absolutely, absolutely. So in my career, I've seen many patients with diabetes who lost sensations in their feet, and then they lost their feet. We need pain receptors. I need emotional center in my pain. I don't want to be blissed out happy person. I want to have pain and suffer. And through that pain and suffering, I can be sensitive to others' suffering. That is the whole purpose of our own pain, is to be compassionate to others' pain. Because if I lose the ability to feel emotional pain, I will lose the ability to see your emotional pain. And the world will become very dry. You know, Mr. Spock's walking around is not a very happy place on the planet. So yes, I think we should first of all be self-aware. Okay, this is what I'm experiencing. This is the reason for it. We shouldn't immediately come to judgment that I am wrong and globalize it. We should focus on what can I change here. It's not that I am bad. Maybe this thing didn't go right, that thing didn't go right. The purpose is not to enable, or the purpose is not to enable the wrong or to lower our standard. The purpose is, through adversity, do not go to such a deep, dark place that you're not able to recover faster. And save your willpower so that you are fulfilling a meaning, not fighting fear. Unfortunately, a very high proportion of people are fear-driven, not meaning-driven. And this whole shift from being fear-driven to meaning-driven is what is going to make us the international leader in everything.
Thank you so much for being on the show and for writing this book. You just are the best. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for your kind words. Good luck to you.
You too. Dr. Thanks. Amit Sood, author of this book, The Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness, very, very smart and terrific, a four-step plan for resilient living. And we'd be happy to send this to your door. It's our thank you gift to you for supporting WNPR, including this show, for $6 a month. This is a privilege to send this your way. 1-800-584-2788.
And I found this conversation so profoundly inspiring, and I know that you have as well. If you have just heard Dr. Sood's words talking about your intentionality, your efforts, and how when you're trying to do the right things, that counts. And sometimes we just don't give ourselves enough credit. If you think the conversation has been inspiring, imagine how the entire book would be to read, to learn from, to do the exercises, to work through it and really see the way that you look at the world change. And that is within your power with this book. It's fantastic. The Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness. It would be our thank you to you when you support Faith Middleton on WNPR today. When you join us at $6 a month as an ongoing monthly donor, or a one-time gift of $72, but it is a great way to do something for yourself and to do something for the public radio station that you rely upon. So I urge you to join us right now. You can do that by making a contribution online at WNPR.org, or, of course, you can call us toll-free at 1-800-584-2788.
And Dr. Sood addresses in a very important way and smart way what to do when your brain gets hijacked with anger. And the adrenaline starts pumping, and you've got rage, and you just stop your rational thinking, and you're in this adrenaline soup. And he talks about what to do to calm even the angriest minds, what we can all do. Everybody gets to this place. So here you go. The Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness by Dr. Amit Sood. You heard him. I hope you did in this conversation. You can always listen to the podcast. We're happy to send this book to you. Perhaps you want to pass it on to someone you care about. I think what a positive, wonderful, enriching gift to give to somebody else. 1-800-584-2788. Or go online, right, Lee?
That's right. You can go online at WNPR.org. Just click on the Donate Now button, and you can donate there. And, you know, the great thing about this is, you know, a lot of people are talking about happiness these days because we look around at everything that we have in the United States, all of this wealth, and yet no one seems happy. And the one thing that I just really love about this book is that it's not just about the topic. It's not just about, here's the problem. Look at what's happening to America. Look at what's happening to countries all over and that are happier than us. This is really a handbook, a workbook that you can work through and build habits and exercises and really change the way your brain works. And that is fascinating. I mean, the fact that, you know, that we've been walking around and so much of the design of our brains is for survival and safety, and it's not for, you know, peacefulness, but it's all within our grasp if we can just learn how to get those healthy habits going. And through training your attention, cultivating emotional resilience, starting a mind-body practice, and picking healthy habits, Dr. Sood has shown us the way in this book. It is a fantastic resource for you, for someone you love, We'd love to send it to you as our way of appreciating you, of showing our gratitude to you for joining WNPR as a contributor today and supporting Faith Middleton, one of the great trusted voices who brings
us. Thank you.
Well, I can brag about you because you can, but.
Well, no matter what, thank you so much. So, Lee, let me just say that this final thing, and that is that. For anyone who says, oh, you know, this is all so self-centered, so self-oriented, there is very deep, rich material in this book about extending oneself to the other and to many others,
mm-hmm.
and the richness that comes from that in the life. So it's not just the looking inward, it's also looking outward. The Mayo Clinic Handbook for Happiness, 203-1800-584-2788, and thanks.